From the outback in the desert sky, to the mountains and the rivers flying by, it's the people there that catch our eye. So come listen to our stories.
Hello, friends. Welcome back to another episode of the Into the Wee Hours podcast. This is episode 51, and I am your host, Sarah Penderas. Today's episode is a conversation with someone who I am very excited to finally meet in person when I'm in Adelaide in the not too distant future. I will be talking to the exceptionally lovely Sophie Gray. Before I introduce Sophie further, I would like to acknowledge the traditional custodians of the land on which I'm recording, the land of the Gubbi Gubbi people. I recognise their continued connection to the land and waters of this beautiful place, and I acknowledge they never ceded sovereignty. Alright, so I'll try and keep this quick. Of course, classic timing, my neighbour has just started mowing their lawn, and I also have a Nessie who is anxious to go for a walk, so... Firstly, a huge thank you as ever to the Patreon supporters for helping me keep the lights on. If you'd like to join the community, any donation would be incredibly welcome. It's patreon.com/intothewehourspodcast. Thanks also to anyone who has liked, followed, subscribed, or shared the podcast, left a review, sent me a message. It means so much seeing that you're enjoying these conversations and helping extend the voice of the awesome guests that I'm chatting to. So, let's get into this wonderful episode with Sophie Gray. Sophie was an absolute delight to talk to, and I am so grateful for all that she shared. I'm keen to let Sophie do the talking, but at just 29, Sophie's life was completely shaken when, not long after moving to Australia, she was diagnosed with acute myeloid leukemia. Sophie shares with us her experience of this, including becoming a stem cell transplant recipient, which at the time meant, amongst many other things, she spent over a month trapped inside a hospital ward, unable to leave. Sophie shares with us how a diagnosis and a near-death experience like this can really shift your perspective on life. And as part of her recovery journey, she jumped in at the deep end, embarking on a through hike of the enormous Heisen Trail as her first ever multi-day hike. As you'll hear, Sophie is also a yoga teacher, and it was a real gift to have the opportunity, for the first time on the podcast, to dive deep into the world of yoga and breathwork. I guarantee if you have ever considered yoga or meditation, but haven't given them a go, you are going to be inspired to do so after hearing Sophie talk so articulately about her practice and her teaching, which includes some incredible sounding forest yoga too. There's no Nessie on this recording. We are joined by the occasional panting of Sophie's doggo, Badger. Enjoy that. It would not be an Into the Wee Hours podcast without a little bit of dog presence. Let me know what you think. I cannot wait for you to listen to Sophie and her incredible, inspiring story. All right, Sophie Gray. Okay, so Sophie, I don't even know how to describe this because this is a podcast and we started with like a hands under chin, like.
Hello, it's me.
Sophie Gray, welcome to the Into the Wee Hours podcast. Thank you for joining.
Thanks for having me. It's really lovely to be here. After talking about it for a while, it's good.
I was actually thinking this, yes, because... For people listening, you and I have not met in person, and this is actually the first time that we've ever spoken. We've yes. exchanged messages via Instagram. We have a mutual friend in Ali.
Yes.
They were episode 28. I actually checked that before I started recording. And actually, Ali is, I think it's fair to say, our most downloaded episode ever. So there we go.
Oh, I've got big boots to fill.
No, not at all. Different episode. But yeah, it's so great to be talking to you because we have talked about this for a little while and now here we are.
Awesome.
So nice. And where are you recording from today, Sophie?
I live in a little beachy suburb about 45 minutes drive from Adelaide CBD. So I'm just south of Adelaide on the Fleurieu Peninsula. Very hard to spell, but that's where I am.
Love it.
I always get it wrong, and it's like so nice when it's written and it's a nice word to look at and say, but I can never quite spell it right.
It's a very Frenchy, European-y word for an Australian place.
Right? Yeah. I don't know where it comes from, but I'd hazard a guess. But yes, it's a beautiful part of the world, and I feel very lucky to be here.
Fantastic. All right. So without introduction, really, we're going to jump into quick fire questions to warm up.
Perfect. Hit me. Let's go.
First question, Sophie. Pineapple on pizza, hell's yes or hell's no?
That's a tricky one because actually pineapple used to really make my mouth itch a lot, but on a pizza it's not too bad. Yeah, I think I have a mild pineapple allergy. But usually no, I would say no.
Fair enough. Are you into reading? Is there anything you're currently reading at the moment?
Oh gosh, I really want to read a lot more than I do, but sometimes I just get a bit of reading fatigue from study stuff, yoga things, and then fun books. I do have a book at the moment, actually, yes, because I'm propping the laptop up on it. It's just I have a really niche type of fiction that I like that's, I guess, like a psychological thriller of small town America, kind of girls go missing, what's the backstory. So I found this book. I don't even know what it's called. I found it in an op shop for $2. So that's my kind of wind down reading. And then I've got lots of fun yoga books and theory and things like that that is just above the laptop here. So between, I don't know if I have any big recommendations.
You don't need to. That's fine. I love the contrast of your yoga books and this like psychological thriller.
Yeah, that's true. One or the other, no in between.
No in between, got it.
No in between.
All right, next question. Can you tell us about the most memorable place you've ever camped?
Oh, so many magical places. The one that springs to mind first, definitely up around the Flinders Ranges in South Australia. And definitely, it's just so rugged there. It's so different to anything that I have seen or experienced, particularly being from the UK, in terms of landscape. It's really alien, like you're on Mars, I think. There was one morning when I was hiking the Hyson Trail, which starts just north of the Flinders Ranges, and we woke up. I was with a hiking buddy, Levi, at the time. We met on the bus on the way up there and both realized that we were hiking to the same schedule because we both used the same blog to do all our days from. So we kind of got dropped off and thought, well, kind of hiking this together now, which was amazing. And we are now great friends. And anyway, we had woken up about 4 a.m. to hike this bit where we were, I think it's the ABC Ranges, and we just walked up and it was a full moon and the sun was rising, the moon was setting, and we were just on this mountain range and amongst it all, pretty high up at this point, and it was just one of the top 10 moments of my life, I think. So that's not necessarily a camping spot, but I guess the experience from that, I can't even remember exactly this spot in which we stayed or what that looked like. We might have pulled in there quite late, but just that morning of getting up, you just pack your things up and you've got that motion, that repetition of how you're packing your bag, and you go and you're just on your journey, and then the day wakes up around you. It's so special, and not something that I do often because I do love a lion. So yes, I think that was just a really favorite moment from camping, from a trip. Yeah.
That sounds very special. I'm still to explore the Flinders Rangers, even. And funnily enough, Ali was talking about it as well. It's like, yes, definitely. Yeah, yes. Would love to go for sure. That sounds really magical.
Yeah.
Very cool. All right. Next one. Finish the sentence. I laugh most when.
I laugh most when. I think just when I'm with my friends. You know, or I could say when I'm exceptionally overtired and being ridiculous, yes. Which is also true. But I think, yeah, I think I just have some very funny friends, I think. Yeah. And it's not, you know, when you get the giggles and you can just keep going and going, that kind of relationship that you can get with your close friends or people that you just are both on the same level.
Perfect. All right, next one. If you could write anything on a billboard for people to see every single day, what would you write?
That is a good question. Let me just like take a deep breath in, relax your jaw, soften your shoulders, repeat. Yeah.
Perfect. I think you actually posted something on Instagram at one point about like that, the power of taking that deep breath or two deep breaths or whatever it was. And I am really interested in breath work, but it is something I always come back to. Like even before jumping on the podcast, it's like, okay, just take that moment to ground and breathe. And it's incredible the response that you even feel in your body as well.
Yeah, that's it. It's such a good one for, you know, if you're about to start work or take a difficult phone call or, particularly when I started yoga, if maybe I'm a bit nervous to teach for whatever reason, then I'm sitting there and I'm guiding people into a breath practice and I'm also feeling these effects myself. I'm breathing in that same time frame and that kind of just sets me up in that right mindset to go on and teach from, I think. Yeah.
Perfect. Last one. And this is one we've asked a few times on the podcast. You come across a genie. The genie grants you three wishes. You can't bring anyone back from the dead. You can't make anyone fall in love with you. And you can't ask for more wishes. What do you wish for?
What would I wish for? Well... currently, I'd wish for peace. I'd wish for freedom. And I would wish for happiness for all beings. Just some small things from me. Nothing too major.
Small requests. Yeah. It would be lovely to grant those, that's for sure.
Yeah. So if you could just put a good word in, that would be good. Thanks.
I'll do my best. Wonderful. All right. You've made it to the end of the quick fire. Okay. So in the past, we have jumped into the origin story of our guest at this point. But before we find out where you have come from, can you give us a snapshot of where you are now? What does, if you have a typical day, what does a typical day look like in the life of Sophie? And if you don't, what does a day look like in the life of Sophie?
Yes. I think it can change day to day for me, but typically I might, that's my dog panting.
We can hear Badger.
Yeah, that's Badger. He's frustrated that I'm not paying him attention. That's his tail. Typical day, often I do a lot of morning yoga classes, so I can be up at 5 o'clock or 5:30, teaching at 6, which I do enjoy doing. I'm not typically a morning person. I'm such a night owl, but it forces me to get up, wake up, start my day in this nice balanced way that I'm facilitating for people. So I might start with some yoga. I'll come home, have some breakfast, take the dog down to the beach, which is just such a nice morning to have. And then it just depends day to day. We'll probably have some more classes or do online or paperwork kind of stuff for events that I'm doing. I suppose at the moment I'm trying to do more events and unique experiences whilst also having some time in studios, which I love doing, but having that flexibility and I guess uniqueness in different events, different places. So I've been doing forest yoga up at Kaipo Forest, which is a beautiful pine forest up here, or down here, I should say. And that's just been lovely to do, to be able to take people outside into nature or have a reason to really slow down. That coupled with some pranayama, some breath work, and having a space to relax and meditate whilst you can really feel your senses, you can really drop into all of these states whilst you're outside and listening to the birds. It's been so good. So outside of fire danger season, I'm doing that and just, yeah, other events, workshops, bits and bobs here and there. So there's, I guess, many different fingers in many different pies, but all into a good pie, I guess. Yeah, all into a nice pie. Yeah, I've been moving into doing a little bit of social media work as well. So I just need to let the dog out of the door. Excuse me. So there's a lot that keeps me busy, I think. So each day might look a little different in terms of the mid-morning, the afternoon, and taking some yoga classes in the evening as well. Yeah, just life things.
Yeah, no, beautiful. And I would love to come back and talk more about your yoga and especially that forest experience.
Yeah.
It's absolutely beautiful. With that in mind of where you are now, would you like to tell us as much or as little as you like about your origin and how you came to be where you are now?
Sure. So I'm originally from the UK. I moved over to Australia about 5 years ago, and that was with an ex-partner who is Australian. And we met when I was backpacking. I left my corporate job in 2016. I was working for a bank. And came to Australia, was on the East Coast doing the very typical backpacker thing. We met there. He's from Adelaide. That's how I then came down here. In between, we did a little bit of back and forth, long distance, and lived in the UK together. I was living in Bristol at that time. And then I decided to come and move officially over here. Our original plan was to tour in a Toyota Coaster bus. So we spent quite a bit of time just decking that out and doing that. And then, unfortunately, I guess, when would it have been? About 8 or 9 months after I'd arrived into Australia, I was diagnosed with acute myeloid leukemia out of the blue. And that derailed the travel plans, of course. I had my treatment here in Adelaide, which I feel really lucky and really grateful for. I think I had amazing care and I feel very privileged to have had that. It took about a year to recover. I had some chemotherapy and then some very, very intensive chemotherapy, which was to essentially kill my immune system and my ability to make my own blood, so that I could then have a stem cell transplant, which is taking someone else's stem cells, putting them into mine. And so the blood that I produce in my body is not technically my own. It has someone else's DNA. So as you can imagine, there's a lot of, I guess, just a lot of recovery from that mentally, physically, like spiritually, in having a near-death experience and that potential to have a relapse occurrence, not knowing that your future is set in stone. I was 29 when I was diagnosed, so it has been very transformative. But I have to say that now I'm definitely the happiest that I have ever been in my life. And I wonder, I don't know, it's always interesting to think about how things could be different, and how things may have unfolded. But I'm very happy with where I am now. Yeah, unfortunately, my relationship ended sometime in my recovery, and I kind of evaluated things, and I feel really lucky as well to have this great community around where I live, amazing friends, and just amazing people that have really held me up and supported me over the years since. This year, this October, will be 5 years since my stem cell transplant. So it seems like there's been a lot of time and also no time at all. It's this weird in-between situation of it. I have some ongoing issues, graft versus host disease from the transplant, which is effectively my cells and my body recognizing that there's also cells belonging to someone else, belonging to my donor. So in areas where there's high cell turnover, so mouth, eyes, some people can get graft versus host disease on their skin or in their gut. It causes just a lot of inflammation. There's just this war going on between the two. Do have some ongoing issues with that, which can be very frustrating. But in the grand scheme of things, I just feel very lucky to be here. So yeah, I guess that brings me up to now. I was also lucky enough to buy a place here and then get my lovely dog. So yes, things are good and I'm very happy. Yeah.
I'm very happy to hear that as well. I'm sure we're all very happy to have you here. And we will come back to health and movement. But just because you mentioned your house, I've noticed some renovation things going on Instagram. It seems like a big project. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, it's such a big project. So I moved in, it would have been October 22. Yeah, October 22. And I thought it would be just done in a few months, and it's still pretty much the same. The bathroom's been done. It's hard when you've got lots of different things and you're doing things by yourself, like that, you know, you might start to do something and then you realize you've got to go to Bunnings and then you come back and then, you've got to go again. And then by the end of the day, you haven't really completed that much when you're doing things pretty solo. But it's been good to do. I had a house in Bristol in the UK, which I did some renovations to as well. Not as much as here. I didn't do as much myself. So I guess at least I had a little bit of background, but just started everything here. So it's coming along. It's coming along well.
You strike me as very resourceful. Like you are, like you say, you are doing this yourself, and you'll have like one tool or another tool, or you're fixing your car, like all sorts of stuff. I'm like, whoa, Sophie just gets it done. I love it.
It's good. I have to say, I do have some friends that have been very helpful as well, or lent me tools, or given me advice, etc., or have given me a hand with things. So I do have to give a little bit of credit where credit's due. It's a lot to just think about when you've also got other things going on as well. You've got your own business, you're a dog mom, you know, that's a lot. You get it.
A huge commitment. I do. But also I'm not the person renovating my house because I'm already not doing enough of the stuff I should be. So I really admire it. That's for sure. And in terms of just when you grew up in the UK, I'm curious because, you know, you mentioned the Heysen Trail, for example, you've been on multi-day hikes. You're obviously very passionate about yoga. Did you grow up as an active child? Were your family outdoorsy? What did that look like?
Absolutely not. It's very funny how I've ended up in this way. No, I hated sports at school. Absolutely hated. I think I might have participated in about one sports day, and every time I would just be sick and I would not be in school that day. The PE teachers, I think they take a long time to get over. Like, it's very traumatic. Did you have to wear PE knickers in school?
Navy knicks. Yeah. Like, literally, like, thick cotton undies over your undies. Yes.
It's so strange. It's so knickers.
Yeah, we took until quite an old age, and especially because I did athletics, so like running in senior school, I was running in Navy Knicks.
Yeah.
That's wild.
Why? Yeah. Why was that a thing? What is wrong with shorts? We weren't allowed to wear shorts until we were in year 10 or year 11, maybe.
Yeah, why on earth? And that was just the girls. Like, the boys got to wear proper shorts.
Exactly.
Yeah. No, I can see how just, that could be really off-putting,
it's so
traumatizing.
Strange. Like, yeah. When I speak badger,
no, I love it.
Has brought me a toy.
The podcast is used to dogs, yeah, that's for sure.
It's just so strange. Anyway, I digress. Yeah, hated sports. Not for me. Hated the idea of group fitness. Nah. Even, you know, my friends would, when I was older, would, you know, let's all go to the gym together as more of a social thing. And I was just not really that much into it, but knew it would be good for me. And even in terms of hiking and getting outdoors and outside, that wasn't until I got to Australia and after my diagnosis and my recovery from cancer was when I really started getting out and about and going on walks. And it's so beautiful here. Australia as a whole is the most beautiful place I've ever been to, and so different and so unique. And for me, having that space and time just to myself and with my thoughts and going for a walk and just seeing how much I could walk was so beneficial to my recovery. And it was only then that it kind of started becoming a hobby, I suppose. And the Heisen Trail was actually the first multi-day hike that I went on. That was the first time that I had my gear. I had a big backpack. I had a tent. Just got dropped off up north at Parachilna with my pack, and off I went. It was so heavy those first few days. But anyway, yes, it's definitely been something that I've grown into since recovery. And I think being in a country that has semi-decent weather most of the time, beautiful landscape, and it's very, very accessible has been what has kept that up for me.
And do you think that you come from a place of your diagnosis and of really challenging health situation? Situation's a terrible word, Sarah, but where you are.
No, that's okay.
So, yeah, sorry. Do you feel like...
It was a crap situation.
Yeah, just yeah, indeed. Do you feel like that desire to... Was it a desire to move or a desire to be outside in nature? Or was it like, I need to change something to improve my health? Like, do you know what the core motivation was with it?
I think in terms of walking and movement and that sense of recovery... When I was going through my stem cell transplant, I was in hospital for just under a month and wasn't allowed to leave the ward. I had to just be in this environment, and I could do laps around the ward, but it was too dangerous, too risky for me to leave because there could be germs. I'm just exposed to like normal people germs, which wouldn't have been good because I didn't have any white cells. Mm. So being so trapped in a space... And I was at the Royal Adelaide Hospital, and it looks, the window that I had, and I could look out into the parklands and I could look out to the River Torrens, and they had a stationary bike that you just to get movement through my legs. So just do that with no resistance on and just be looking out, and having that taken away from me made me so inspired to go and appreciate that even more. There was also the want of just getting my strength back. I was so destroyed, to put it kindly, just body and mind. When I came out, I could really not walk very far. I think I got taken out in a wheelchair for the first round of chemotherapy that I had because I was so weak. I had lost so much muscle and so much weight that I was just trying to get my stamina back and get things back because I just wanted to get back to some kind of sense of, not normality, but I also didn't want to spend the rest of the time that I had kind of not making the most out of things. And I think that's been a big driving thing for me going forward. In that year it's very risky if you relapse within that year after a stem cell transplant. There's a lot of times they don't do another transplant. There's not really much that they can do. You might be able to get on a clinical trial or something, but you're pretty screwed. So I really just wanted to do as much as I can in the time that I had. And then I suppose from that point became an enjoyment and a feeling and a sense of freedom, even if I wasn't walking very far or doing very much, but being able to just, yeah, have that experience, I think, was so important for me.
Yeah, gosh, being in a hospital ward for a month, no fresh air, all of the rest, like, goodness me, I can, yeah, it's incredible. Incredible also to see where you are now and how it would seem to me you have recovered as well. It's a very beautiful thing, that's for sure, Sophie. And then in terms of your mental health with that, do you feel that being able to, even if it was just walk a very short distance, like it was not just the physical gaining strength, it was just that mental health benefit as well that came from that movement?
Yeah, definitely. There's something about being out in nature and the nervous system reset, I think, and having the thought, the experience that there's so much going on that is not just you. You know, we're so in our heads as humans, like we're just human beings. We're just in ourselves. And you go out and you can just notice how nature interplays with each other and, I don't know, watch the waves, watch the bugs, watch the wind and the grass. Just all of these things, I think, really helps to slow down your nervous system. There are like a lot of studies around this and the benefits of nature and in recovery and, yeah, having gardens and hospitals and all sorts of things like that, I think is so impactful for your mental health as well. And to have that link into the now, into the present, it's a fantastic resource that we have.
It is. And it sounds like your forest yoga is also the epitome of capturing that presence, that being in nature. And then you also have sound bowls that I've seen as well.
Yes, yeah? I love the sound bowls. They're like a hug for your brain, I think. It's so common, it's so easy, because we're humans, for our mind to wander and it attaches to thoughts. And, you know, that's our practice, that's our meditation practice. But in having the sound bowls, it's almost bringing you into the present. You're not thinking about your to-do list and what you need to get from the supermarket. It's almost, yeah, a bit of a pull into the moment. So I really like using them to facilitate that longer kind of drop-in meditation where it's a bit more accessible than just having silence there, which can be quite daunting. It's, you know, fantastic for a while, but I think silence is very tricky to sit in meditation and stay present if you don't have a super big meditation practice.
Yeah, I would agree. There's something, I mean, if anyone is listening that hasn't been to a sound bath, for example, there is something about it and the way the sound moves through your body. I am not musical. Yeah. I don't know how to explain this, but there's something about that feeling. And like you say, if you do have a really busy head and you're sitting in silence, it's so easy to attach to every single thought that is buzzing through your head and to not be present. But there is something about that sound that really does help you drop in. If someone was listening, Sophie, who's like never meditated, and I feel like I hear a lot of people be like, I can't sit still, especially people, you know, like type A, busy, very successful, but like, I can't sit still, I've got too many thoughts, I don't have time for this. What would you say to them about a practice of meditation or yoga even?
Yeah, I think starting slow, it's like, oh my gosh, I've got to meditate and I've got to meditate for 15 minutes and I've got to do it so well. That's the fun of it, is there's no such thing. Guided meditations, like there's so many online on apps. And I can find, you know, I don't meditate every day. I can lose track. I can lose myself. It's something that always brings me back. Same with yoga. It's the only thing that I've had in my life that I've gone back to again and again and again. And it's always different depending on how your state is on that day. And like, you know, if you're sitting there and thinking, oh, wow, I'm meditating so good today, then I don't know, that's not really the point. But all good.
Not that we would judge, Sophie. Yeah.
No judgment, you know. But like, there's no right or wrong. There's no like good or bad yoga. It's just, you're just yogaing. You're just doing it.
But I
you're just meditating. Just chill out. Just
take there are no stars breaths. Awarded. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, and sometimes I find that listening to guided meditations, it's so hard to find a voice that you like. So I have, I have a couple of teachers, and it's almost quite creepy that I've listened to a lot of these meditations for so many years, and that they have put me to sleep so many times when I've done yoga nidras, or like body scans and relaxations as well, that it's like, I don't think I could ever meet them in real life because their voice has been such a guide throughout the years. But there's so many things out there that can draw you back in and keep you present. So in listening to a guided meditation of having that, you know, like a little coach, okay, come on back to your breath. If your mind's wandered and you go, ah, fuck, yeah, I was talking about, oh damn, I was thinking about my shopping list, or you know, what I've got to do tomorrow or whatever. So it's good to have that reminder, and if you feel like just having those few breaths or moments of silence, then you can start from there. Similarly with yoga, sometimes it's a similar thing to finding a voice that resonates with you as well. You're finding a teacher that resonates with you, because it's not going to be a one-size-fits-all thing. You might go to a class, someone might go to my class and think, God, she is the most irritating person ever. Why is she doing this? And not come back, and that's fine. I hope that then that person goes to a different yoga class and a different teacher or a different style and finds something that suits them, because there is so much out there and so much capacity for growth and change and space on a personal level within a class, within having a practice where you move your body, you move your body and your breath. It's just so nice. I just love it.
And we haven't actually touched on how you discovered yoga.
Yes. I've always been interested in it, funnily enough. And I think some of the first yoga classes that I went to, I was visiting my friend Alex in LA. I would have been about 22, I think. And his friend, Tony, is an amazing, very experienced, just incredible yoga teacher. And he had a studio there called The Raven, and we decided to go to a class, and I was kind of nervous and excited, and it was amazing, and I felt incredible. And I think I went to a couple more classes there, and then was hooked. I came back to the UK and just kept practicing, really. I'd moved from London to Bristol around that time. It must have been, 22 or so. And had moved to the other side of the country. I didn't really know very many people in Bristol, and I had started just random jobs, random office jobs, and it was just such a nice way for me to unwind and de-stress, and I guess I was kind of looking for things to do as well. Just trying different teachers and different styles and going when I could was so good. It just continued like that for a few years, and I tried my hand at Bikram, and I did all different sorts of things. But it's always something that I've come back to. There were some times when I've been traveling, or when I'd first gotten to Australia, and of course going through treatment and things, where my practice wasn't there as much. It wasn't as much as a constant as it is now. It's a bit more of a non-negotiable. But it's amazing to have something that really keeps you interested over the years. And it's like I've only got into just the cusp of yoga, it seems. There's so many teachings. There are so many aspects. It's the only thing that has kept me interested. So it's, yeah, just so exciting. I did my yoga teacher training just, that was a year exactly after my stem cell transplant. So
wow.
It was something that I've been thinking about for a number of years, but wanted to get the bus up and running, and I was going to do the lap around Australia. And there were just lots of other things that were coming up around it. And after my stem cell transplant and going through the recovery, you kind of realize, well, if I want to do something, I'm just going to go and do it. There's no point in putting things off anymore. So I booked that in. I went to the Krishna Village in New South Wales, kind of Northern Rivers-ish area, I guess a little bit lower. And that was good. That was COVID times-ish because the borders to Victoria were closed. So we drove up to Broken Hill and drove across. And that was amazing. And I loved it. I was surprised at how much I could do and invest in it, just being a year after my transplant and, you know, super full-on 6-week intensive course and getting up at 4 a.m., teaching at 5 a.m., like stuff like that. But I just loved it. And then every year I just try and do, there's always trainings that get my interest. So just adapting and developing as it goes on, and you find your style of how you want to teach, where you want to teach from, and what informs that. And that's the beauty of there being different elements, different teachers, is that it can be so unique.
Fantastic. Yeah, yoga, it definitely seems vast, and I can see how it, I mean, like anything, there's a lifelong learning, but I've certainly seen friends who are yoga instructors really evolve in their practice. And even from, you know, starting off as like vinyasa, hot yoga flow stuff, to just suddenly, to really transitioning to embracing things like yin and a totally different experience, right? But yeah, I think that's the beauty of it as well. And it seems like that's what appeals to you too in that sense. What style do you teach currently?
A little bit all over the shop. So I do some creative vinyasa, which is like just fun sequencing, quite fast, quite flowy. And I really enjoy coming up with those sequences. And it's in that moment, or those moments of people flowing together, and it just makes me so excited. There's just an energy and an atmosphere, and it just makes me so pumped. And you just see everyone's in their zone, and it's so amazing. It really just inspires me. Then also I slow it down a little as well. I do a yin yang class, so on a bit of faster movement, of breath-led movement, and then dropping into some yin and some longer holds. I guess more restorative, hatha, a bit of everything.
A whole mix,
But I like funky, music for me. I like doing the playlists as well.
This, you know, as you're talking, it's just, I've been getting more and more interested in how like creativity can intertwine with adventure and with movement. And there is like, there is so much creativity in the teaching of yoga, I'm realizing. I mean, it's an obvious thing, but I hadn't actually consciously thought about it before in terms of your sequencing, in terms of the music. And in terms of teaching itself, it's one thing to enjoy a practice. Like as a student, I go to a yoga class and I love it. But the teaching, is that something that you have always been interested in and that has come naturally to you?
Not necessarily interested in, but definitely evolved in the sense of that I wanted to facilitate the feelings and the experiences that I have had from amazing teachers that I've had for others. And doing the training after my cancer treatment, I wanted to specifically break down barriers between yoga students or going to yoga and a cancer or chronic illness? Like, how can we bring this practice, which is amazing, unique, beautiful, and make it accessible? Because there's a difficulty in a lot of studio classes that, as much as you want to encourage each individual to have their own practice, there's not the time or the space to really help and drop into that, and you know, to an nth degree of giving everyone the right amount of assistance in finding a practice that is going to be unique to them, particularly if they're a new yoga practitioner, so, or a new yogi, I suppose. So in creating the Yoga After Cancer course, I'm hoping to break down some of these barriers where within a group of 10 or 12, we might have one person sitting on a chair, one person is on the floor, and we're able to modify and get a similar feeling and sensation from postures, but it's going to look vastly different for each person, depending on the surgery they've had or things like that. So finding that space that's going to work for you. So, okay, we're still getting a stretch in towards this area and we can still feel, you know, the chest opening and the legs growing longer, but we're all rotated, we're all on different aspects. And that's something that really excites me. And I think there's so much space to do. You know, yoga is, it's our union, it's our liberation, and it's finding that for each person. And yeah, on a practical level, you know, what do you do if perhaps you've always been interested in yoga or you've done it here and there and you're diagnosed with cancer, you go through treatment and you're thinking, wow, that would be really good to go back to, but I don't really know if I could keep up and I don't know how I could do a lot of these postures because I have a stoma in now, or I, you know, can't move my arm in a certain way. So how would I do a downward facing dog? And being able to hold space for all of those things within a group, I think is fantastic. And to then hopefully empower those people to go to classes, general classes, or be able to feel that they could do that and be empowered to move their body slightly differently, be empowered to find that accessibility. Even just breaking down that barrier of going into a yoga studio and wondering what on earth is going on is, you know, where do I put my shoes? We're not wearing shoes. Yeah. Okay. You know, it's a big thing, even just walking into that room and that space. So just trying to break down these barriers is what I have been doing with my Yoga After Cancer classes. So
it sounds like,
yes, that's been exciting.
Yeah, what an incredible practice and what an incredible space you're holding for people. And I would imagine as well that through this, although essentially the space you're creating is tailored in a way that you can attend to the individual, there must also be a real community connection feel as a result of shared experience from those people there as well. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, yes, that's it. I think it's there can be a bit of an awkwardness because you kind of all know why you're all there. Yeah. And it's like this club, no one wants to be in this club, but there's less of that, I suppose, a fear, you know, you don't want to be the one that the teacher's coming over to all the time. Equally, when I'm teaching, I don't want to be going over to one person all the time. Like, I'll just, you know, let them flow. If they're doing anything that's unsafe or it looks like they're really struggling, of course, but you have to find how you want to move your body. So yeah, having that smaller group and time and space to just, yeah, attend to people and share and have a chat and be able to come from a space of lived experience as well, I think it has been great for that, of really honoring the spot that we don't always need to be the same. It's not that our yoga poses and postures have to be the same. It's making the postures and the poses and the feelings work for each individual person. And that might look so different just in one person day to day, let alone having a group of different bodies in a room. So hopefully doing a tiny bit to break down the Instagram yoga stereotype, which as a white woman with a, like 8 to 10 body, I kind of am in that, but I can't. I think it's this, hopefully I can, you know, practice what I preach and make that accessible for people whilst acknowledging that a lot of my work and business is through social media, and I'm in this contradiction and I don't want to post on it, but it's okay. I can go into it. I can feel into it, and I'm just going to be another yoga instructor on Instagram.
But you're not another yoga instructor on Instagram, Sophie. That is the whole point. And social media, I know it gets a bad rap, and there's a reason why. And there's no doubt that if I started looking at yoga hashtags on Instagram, I'd probably be like, I'm not flexible enough. I'm too fat. Like all of those things, yes, for sure. But it is also a platform to share good. And with that in mind, would yes. you mind talking a little bit about your work with You're the Cure and the blood stem cell registry stuff yes. that you're involved with, just so yes. people can understand, like, what can we do to help as
yes,
well?
Yes, for sure. So I guess to give a little bit of background about the stem cell transplant, because it's a word that, or a term that it gets thrown around. So it is the same as a bone marrow transplant, essentially. Stem cell transplant, I guess, is a more modern term for it. Back in the day, I don't know, 80s? Is that the day? Back in the day, it used to be that this involved a relatively painful procedure of donating stem cells, where there would be big needles going into your hip and taking out your stem cells. And from that, those would be given to someone else. But nowadays, and in most cases, I think in over 90% of cases, those stem cells can be taken from a donor just by a process similar to giving blood, donating blood. So from one arm, your blood will be taken out. It goes through a big machine, which takes out your stem cells, and the rest gets pumped back into your body. So you would have the cannulas in both arms. And that process might take 4 or 5 hours. You're sat there for a little while watching movies, having some snacks, etc. And you might get given a few injections just into the fatty tissue in your tummy to help stimulate your white blood cells in the days before your donation. So that, in a sense, is the process it is to donate. But the donor registry in Australia is dropping year after year. People age out of the registry. Ideally, donors would be males aged 18 to 35, just because they have more stem cells. Yeah. I do know that my donor was female, so you just don't know. And you might be someone's only match. So they do a process called tissue typing, which is separate from your blood group, where they check just your type of tissue, and to try and find a good match is usually around heritage. So people who have a mixed heritage or quite a unique heritage are much more unlikely to find a match. Me being standard white British girl did have a lot of matches, I hear. And there's some other cross-typing that they might do to try and minimise severe side effects after a transplant too. You might have antibodies that wouldn't go with the donor's antibodies and things like that. My work with those organisations, so with Strength to Give, I was an ambassador with them, I think must have been about 2 years after my transplant. And similarly with You Are the Cure, who's Pam, who runs that organisation, is just a real power force in trying to diversify the registry. She had a stem cell transplant herself, and this has been her mission for about 7 years now, in trying to reach different communities, different groups, because there are patients, there are people with blood cancer that will die without finding a match. So really my work within those organizations and I guess to raise awareness of what a stem cell transplant is, what the donation process is, and how much you could impact someone's life being on the registry, is to try and stop that. I cannot imagine going through what I went through, but also not having a donor on the registry, not having someone out there that could have donated and saved my life. And I find it amazing that a stranger somewhere out there did that for me. This is a complete selfless act. Like, I get shivers talking about it because what a way, you know, it's the only donation that the only live kind of organ donation that you can give, but it would have such this huge impact on not only that person, not only me as a recipient, but my friends, my family, my life. All of that wouldn't be here. It's riding on such a small but huge thing. And yes, I think join the registry.
Thank you for describing that so eloquently. And it is incredible the difference, like you say, with that donation, that what it's like a day of my life to potentially save someone else is just incredible. How does someone go about joining the registry, Sophie?
So if you're 18 to 35, Strength to Give, through their website, they are, so hopefully running, there was a pilot program and it's come and gone a little bit because of some funding issues. But essentially through Strength to Give website, you can sign up online. They will send you a pack in the post with a cheek swab. You just swab that, you follow the instructions, you send it back and that's it. Should you be a match for someone down the track, they will get in contact with you and see if you're available to donate. You don't have to. There's no, you know, no clause. But yeah, that's how you would join. You can also join if you are a blood donor as well and ask when you were there at Lifeblood here in Australia. Ask them if you could join the stem cell transplant stem cell registry, and they will take a tiny bit of extra blood, which will then put you on the registry. Yeah.
Fantastic. Thank you for sharing that. Okay, let's have a bit of a change of gears. So we haven't talked about yoga on the podcast before, so thank you for sharing that. We also have not talked about camels.
Yes.
So I am aware that you went on a camel adventure, but I know nothing about it, and I would love to hear about what that experience was like.
It was amazing, incredible. So each year after my stem cell transplant, I try and just do something fun and random, and you know, one of those things that you might look at and be like, gosh, yeah, wow, that's so cool, I'd love to do that one day. I try and do that. So one year was my yoga teacher training. One year was a hike to Heisen. And then I did the camel trek last year.
Where was it?
So I flew up to Alice and then we got picked up from there and drove towards the Simpson Desert. We changed from a bus into a couple of four-wheel drives. And I was with an amazing group of like-minded women travelers. And it was just amazing. So it's wild women adventures. And the owner, Maddie, is just amazing and an amazing guide, facilitator, organizational queen. It was so much fun and just the most unique experience of just walking with camels in the desert. We just did a small trek. There is a couple of companies that do the walks and the treks there. And just walking alongside camels over literal just desert where there might not have been anyone walking there for hundreds of thousands of years. And it was interesting that I think it's Australian Camel Expeditions, hopefully I've got that right, that were running the camel part of it. but actually doing ecological surveys and having extensive nature knowledge and research, and using that as a way to be able to map through the desert and get to these spots that cars can't get to. I'm finding indigenous artifacts and tools and logging those. It was just so good, so exciting, so interesting. I would love to do it again. I think camels themselves as an animal are just beautiful. I have a lot more respect for them than I did going into it. I wasn't too sure, just so, yeah, that sounds cool, but realizing the uniqueness in the camels, their personalities, how they interact with each other or interact with the handlers, you know, they're a little bit unpredictable, and that's that, but it's very interesting. Yes, certainly opened my eyes to the world of camels.
It sounds amazing. And it's funny, I hadn't thought about camels prior to reading, funnily enough, another Sophie Masterson, who walked across Australia with a camel, a group of camels that she had trained, and walked solo across Australia. The book's called The Crossing. Have you read that, Sophie?
Yeah, I really want to read it. I haven't got it, but I've listened to a lot of her podcasts and followed a bit of her journey when I think she was just on that second half when I discovered her. Incredible, it's interesting. Amazing. A book I'd love to read. Yeah, did you enjoy it?
I did enjoy it. And funnily enough, I've loaned the book to Ali, so you can grab it from Ali once they've read it.
I can.
So there we go.
Okay, amazing. But, yeah. I'll be in touch with Ali about that.
I enjoyed it just in the sense of the feeling of the wilderness being out there sounded incredible. The stars, just the sheer miles of terrain, seeing absolutely nobody and just being with those animals who you're completely reliant on. For some reason, I feel like I had a negative perception of camels. I don't know where that comes from, some kind of conditioning around camels.
Not that I just didn't have the respect for them that I do now, I think. And I don't, you know, you just think, camel, I don't know, it's weird. Why? Where does that come from?
I have no idea. It's not like they're roaming the streets of the UK. Like, I don't know where we get these ideas from. But there you go. And while you were out there, was it like an overnight thing? Were you sleeping in swags, or what did that look like?
Yes. So you, load up your swags onto the camels. One camel actually has like a small kind of esky fridge thing on one side. You have your food is all in there. And yeah, we just did 3 nights and just did a lap. Well, I guess like a big thing just across sand dunes, and we're just walking, and sometimes it's slow and the camels want to go off and eat something somewhere and you're just waiting for them to go. It was such a good experience. I would highly recommend it. I think they do some longer ones a week and 2 weeks and such. It was just fantastic to be out in the desert as well. You know, we stayed there a night before and a night after, and just that the sky and the silence and the stars, of course. It's so magical, so amazing.
Fantastic. Yeah, it definitely has inspired me to look into do something like that for sure. Very, very cool. Do you have any idea of what your next fun adventure will be for the year ahead?
I'm not sure. I have about 7 days of walking left on the Heisen Trail because sprained my ankle. Yes, I sprained my ankle and I had to get rescued from off-duty SES.
Oh, so
Got driven to Quorn. And I continued to walk on it for a while, but I did get from Paratilna, from the northern end down to the Adelaide Hills. So I did do, oh gosh, what is it off the top of my head? Around 1,000 Ks, maybe a little less. So I did do that. I really wanted to do it as a through hike. But never mind. And so I've done little weekends and bits and bobs here and there. It's closed. The trail is closed during fire danger season because it goes through lots of private property. So that does put a small spanner in the hiking window for me and negotiating work. And I had moved house in that time, renos, etc. But hopefully I finished that this year. And I would love to do more multi-day hikes. I've been looking at the Bibbulmun in WA. I think that one would be high up on my list for sure. Yeah. And it's one of those things of just dropping into different hobbies and what ones do you continue with? You know, do I start investing in enlightening my pack and dehydrating my meals and then just go and do it? Or do I do something else? I'd love to finish the Heisen though, that's for sure. I've often thought maybe I'll just do the Heisen again, but maybe I should branch out and do something else.
So just going back, at the top you mentioned that the Heisen, if I remember correctly, was the first time that you'd done any like overnight multi-day hiking. So for your first ever one, you took on a trail of over 1,000 kilometres. Am I understanding correctly?
Yeah, that's right. Yes. Yeah. My bag was so heavy. It was so funny. I was living with some excellent friends of mine, Chad and Emily, very experienced hikers, adventurers, guides, much more than me. So they were very helpful in getting my stuff ready. But I remember the night before and I had loaded up my backpack and I couldn't put it on. I couldn't get it on my back because it was so heavy. Yeah, there was a lot of uncomfortableness the first couple of days. But what do? You've just got to carry on walking. You can't like call it in now. I've just got to keep going.
Well, so embarrassing. Well... Come on, I'm sure your yoga has taught you that you do not need to worry about what other people are thinking of you in that.
No.
But,
no, I mean, but it's good to go through, yeah.
Do you think though, I mean, having gone through everything you have with your health, do you feel like your tolerance for discomfort has increased as a result of that? Or was it just a case of like, even having that perspective of the gratitude for being out there means it's like, what, like I can definitely persist and go through this?
Yeah, I think it has definitely, definitely increased that like tolerance. You know, it's that amazing thing of not like, oh, I have to do this. I have to do that. You know, yeah. I get to do this. This is absolutely incredible. Yeah. Yes. And those, the dogs just come on in. Hi, Benji. just the ability to be able to do that. I get to do this. I get to be able to move my body in this way, and it's hard and it's grueling because I've done no strength practice or endurance training or anything like that. And those things I would change because it just makes your life that bit easier. But also if you don't have the capacity to do that, well, just go out and try and just do something. You know, it doesn't have to be this huge thing, you know, of course, unless you're trying to hike Everest or something. It can just be these little elements of micro adventures and seeing what happens within that journey and along the way.
I always say that, like, even just the power of a simple overnight in a tent or away from home is incredible. There's so much power in that. But I mean, that's a huge hike to take on as your first one. Were you nervous going into it? What were your emotions around it? Can you remember?
Yeah, a little bit like a nervous excitement of like, cool, see you in 6 weeks, everyone. Off I go. But it's just so much fun. Until the sprain in the ankle was a bit of a dampener. But, you know, apart from that, it was just so much fun. And I'd driven up, I'd done all my food drops. I just drove up the weekend before and dropped, you know, like a week or 4 days, whatever worth of food off at some of the pubs and the hotels and things there. And I was just keenly in a couple of Facebook groups and yeah, following along with someone's blog of how many Ks they did and where you could go night for night. It's a brilliant trail for infrastructure, that there's pretty much water every day, or you can space out so that there's a little shelter and a walk and somewhere that you can camp. It's incredible. I'd highly recommend the Heisen Trail to anyone.
And how long were you on the trail before you sprained your ankle?
Not very long at all. It must have been, oh gosh, a week.
Oh, how did you do it?
Was in a gorge, was in a kind of gully, I suppose, doing this creek walking, and it's so tedious. It's like there's just, you're on kind of shingles and everything is sliding underneath you and you're going so slowly and it's so frustrating because you just want to, get there. And it was kind of getting dark, so we were somewhat rushing just to try and get to the next spot, which was about another 5Ks or so. And I was trying to just back down off of a ridge. There was a tree. And as my foot landed on the side of the tree, instead of being supported on there, it just slid out towards the side and just like inflated immediately. And I was in so much pain. I've never sprained an ankle that badly before. So it was an interesting thing. I was actually very lucky that I was with Levi, who I'd started the trail and kept walking with, because he was able to help me. We walked out 5Ks. He carried my bag for me. And it was the worst walking, the worst part, where at one time you're like scaling and there's like this rope chain that you have to try and pull yourself up onto. And I'm doing it with an ankle that's swollen and falling apart. And we knew that there was phone reception at the next spot. So I got out to there, said goodbye, got covered in flies, called it in, and rested in Quorn for about 5 days. This very cool country town that we'll always have I'll have a little soft spot for forever. And I just hung out there for a while. And carried on walking, and it was good, and then it was bad and good and bad, and I came off and got an x-ray and then carried on. By the time I got to Adelaide, and then it was torrentially raining and I was just crying and my ankle really hurt, and I thought, nah, I think we've just got to rest for a while. So yes, that was the end of that. I reckon it was about a month or so that I would have been away for, with the rest days and with having time off and a detour into the hospital at Port Pirie. And it was a nice length of time.
It's a significant length of time living out of your backpack and hiking. And funnily enough, I had a very quick flick through some of your stories, and I think you posted something like, is this what hiking is, packing your backpack and unpacking your backpack, or something like that. Like, it's so
yes,
true, definitely. Also. Yeah.
Yes, you're just packing it up, you're unpacking it, you're like, where have I put this? You know, you have so little things to think about, you know, because your food is there, you're walking from A to B, like, there's no like big to-do list. It's this beautiful experience and this scary experience at the same time. Like, the hardest day that I had was when all the battery on all of my devices died. I had like an old iPhone with podcasts and audiobooks and all of those things. And to actually just walk in silence along farmland, which is flat, with your bag that's digging in, with an ankle that has been sprained, is just really hard.
There's no escaping. Like, you literally have to be with yourself, right?
Exactly. So it was a good experience, that's for sure. But yes, I'd like to go back and do another hike.
I'm definitely curious about the trail. Although there was one other story I saw that I think you were in a hut and there was a really creepy thing in the hut. Do you know what I'm talking about?
What
it was like a plastic baby doll or something.
Yeah, it was so creepy. And you're so secluded and so in the middle of nowhere. And there's just some weird things around. And you think, God, am I safe? Like, you know, I think Australia as well is the safest place that I've ever felt as a woman and as like hiking solo. But of course you always kind of wonder or have your back up a bit. But yes, the doll was somewhat creepy. That's for sure.
Just the context. It's like, how on earth did it get there? What is it doing there? And why is it like lying naked in the corner of the hut?
Yeah. Why is it there? Exactly. So strange.
All right. I am conscious of your time. Is there anything else that you would like to share before we start to wrap up, Sophie?
Go for a walk, take a big breath, do some yoga, even a YouTube video. I'm a big fan of a yoga YouTube videos on your bedroom floor. I think it's amazing that we have so many resources now that can be so accessible for so many people.
Yeah, it's so simple. That's a good point. You don't have to invest a huge amount of money in this. You can quite literally stream a yoga video for free online if that's what's available to you. Yeah. And okay, last question with that in mind is, can you just simply tell us something you feel grateful for in this moment, Sophie?
Oh, my little doggy. My little... Oh, he's looked up. I've woken him up.
We haven't talked about Badger.
He is so amazing. I know. He's so cute. He is the star of the show, really. The star of any show. He's amazing. He is a 6 or 7 year old rescue staffy that is just incredible. Like, you know, it's dogs that I think have a lot to teach us about life. Like, they're not sweating the small stuff and they're just happy and in the present moment, and they're pretty grateful, you know. It's, yeah, he's just my world. I love him so much.
And with you on that, dogs have a lot to teach us, that's for sure. All right, Sophie, if people want to find you online, I know we've talked about social media, if they want to find like an influencer yoga teacher like you.
Yes.
Where can they find you?
Sometimes I just post a lot of ridiculous memes sometimes. So, yes, Instagram, Facebook is Sophie Gray Yoga, and Gray is with an A, G-R-A-Y.
Perfect. Thank you so much for your time today and for sharing all you have. I appreciate you very much.
Thanks for having me. It's such a pleasure.
From the outback in the desert sky to the mountains and rivers flying by, it's the people there that catch our eye. So come listen to our stories.